You are listening to In Response, a legacy podcast. A show where three handsome guys talk about their favorite Magic the Gathering format, Legacy. This show is brought to you by QueerNessAtAnyCost.com and Austrian-Legacy.com. You can support the show at patreon.com/response_legacy. And now, lean back and enjoy.
Hello everyone and welcome to the 61st episode preparing for Eternal Weekend of
In Response,
a Legacy podcast.
I'm Peter Plank.
And I'm Daniel.
And we're talking about Legacy.
Most of the time.
Exactly.
So Peter, it is actually this very nice period and time of the year again where we two together sit next to a nice campfire and have our sip of whiskey or maybe a cigar or two, and we talk about Legacy.
Seems like a good time to be, actually. I mean, it's not in regard that Phil is not here and we have the pleasure to stay calm
exactly. And
collected.
I feel certainly like that. But it, honestly, yeah, we are only the two of us today because Philip is sick. Of us, yeah. No. We will manage, of course, also. But yeah, sadly, he couldn't make it today. But anyways, Peter, we actually haven't talked about. Yeah, we haven't talked at all actually for quite some time, I think. So, how have been in the last couple of weeks?
I mean, very very fine, far distinct from Legacy.
Yeah,
but yeah, keeping an eye on everything out there. Doing some stuff for the European Legacy Masters, but
okay. So, but could you because you were not really able to attend any Friday Night Magic the last couple of weeks, I would say. Could you, I don't know, find a couple of times where to actually think or do something for Magic, or was this only all absent?
It's basically all the time, as you may are yourself, mm-hmm. Our fellow listeners. I'm the guy that absorbs a lot of content, yep. Deck ideas, stuff on Twitter where guys talk about the lists or share some interesting ideas and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So I'm basically absorbing it, doing mostly theoretical work, I would say, on my deck lists.
Yep.
Because Friday, it's the time of the year where I have a lot of other things to attend. Mm-hmm. So I can't really attend FNM. But I'm absorbing the stuff and try to stay on the theoretical side with my lists.
Well, I've been playing a little bit, also not as much as I could, but a couple of times I could play our local league, of course. And what we thought about now is that Eternal Weekend is coming up, so it would make sense to talk about, well, first of all, to help you, of course, because you will be going. It would be very important to see a little bit what the preparation would be for this nice event. And a lot of people are going, I think. I sadly cannot make it. But is Phil actually going?
Phil isn't going either. Okay, but so you're I the think only we're one from... like 10 from Linz that are attending Eternal Weekend. So
very, very nice, yeah. Our community always... staying strong in this kind of events, but it is just a very nice opportunity in Prague, of course, if we have something. You said something about last time was just before Corona, right?
I think the last Eternal Weekend we had in Europe should be 2019, mm-hmm. because like we had in between the online Eternal Weekends, and last year we were the only, I would say, area of Magic play where we only got an online one.
Yeah.
But this time it's the first in-person Eternal Weekend. And I mean, it's the second Eternal Weekend that I'm attending because I played, I think, 2021 Eternal Weekend online or something like that.
But, it was an online one.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I played Painter for a 5-4 finish.
5-4, okay.
Up until like 3 or 4 in the morning was a heck of a time.
I think I can remember that. Did we talk about this at the podcast at some point? I think so, maybe, right?
Yeah, for sure, because I and Phil, we played it in the Discord together. A few of our listeners joined in and talked with us. It was a pretty awesome experience, but pretty late as well.
Perfect opportunity to come back to one of our older episodes also and re-listen to them. I think this would be, if you maybe are a jump-in listener, let's say, maybe you have just, this is your first episode. And I think before we get into this topic, we can talk to our listeners in that sense. Of course, thank you for listening. And we also have a Patreon.
Yeah.
And we have some Patreons that are following us and supporting us. We have, of course, Gino. Then we have Matt Duncan. And then we have Moritz Eichmeier.
Exactly. And we want to thank Matt Duncan for increasing in the tiers. And we hope you will enjoy your sticker soon.
Very nice, yeah. You get some, as Peter mentioned, stickers. You have some bonuses and some, let's say, merch from In Response that you can grab your hands on. And it should be a nice little thank you from our side if you want to support us. And we really appreciate it.
Exactly.
So, talking about, of course, Eternal Weekend, you have not been playing too much.
Yeah.
But I think, in my kind of impression right now, the legacy meta game is not fully open. I think we talked about this in the last couple of episodes already extensively. Yeah. So it is very fluctuating, but it kind of starts to settle down. It is at least my impression. And I just am curious, how do you see your favorite deck, which is of course Painter, in this kind of meta game that... for example, we have these big control decks. We have, of course, still this tempo. Let's put Delver Scam into one package. And combo is, I think, hard to evaluate. I don't think it's too present. But how do you see Painter in this meta game?
It's hard to predict how Painter will fare because of my theoretical analysis of the deck. I'm really unsure how the game versus 4-color control is. Mm-hmm. Because like in the previous year or so, 4-color control was a little bit up and downy, but you could outgrind the deck. You could essentially, with Swords of Plowshares, for example, also keep Uro in check, which is a nice thing to do, that you don't have to jump block it and gain them basically card advantage. But you can get rid of the first or maybe even the second, and that's pretty hard for them to do anything besides Minskin booing you.
That's true.
But 4-color control or 5-color control sometimes.
With Yorion maybe even.
With Yorion switched up a lot. Yeah. They are playing now Up the Beanstalk.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Really, really sick card advantage engine exactly for the late game.
Yeah.
So that means you aren't really that able to outgrind. They also are playing now a few Terminus, which mm-hmm. is also a pretty devastating card. Mm. Even though we sometimes don't really commit like too many creatures, but it can reset the board. Previously, like Meltdown or something like that was, yeah, it happens, but you kept the Welders and everything is okay. But now they get rid of Welders and your artifact creatures, so it can be a problem. And they got Leyland Binding. Leyland Binding is a really, really strong card.
It turned out to completely replace Prismatic Ending, actually. I have not seen much Prismatic Ending being played at this point in time. Almost every control deck, if they have, or sometimes even if they don't have the Beanstalks, they would just jam for Leyland Binding. And this is their removal suit that really nicely rounds out Swords to Plowshares and Terminus, of course. And with Beanstalk, it's just so insane. It's bonkers. I mean, you have to invest a little bit because you have to fetch for multiple colors to reduce the cost, which makes your mana base a little bit vulnerable. But it's a pretty good effect if you excel just one non-land permanent and also get to draw a card.
Yeah, the thing is now, versus 4-color control, the Magus of the Moon will come in pretty, pretty handy. But on the other hand, if they get to stick one white color onto the field, it's so hard to stick any effect. Because like previously, they played mostly like enchantment removal and stuff like that. So if the enchantment sticks, they can remove the enchantment. But the creature is pretty hard to deal with, actually.
Yeah.
From the painter's side. But yeah.
One white and you mean from the control side? Or if you have the Magus, for example? You mean?
If I have the Magus, I mean, one of the cards that also comes in is like the Hydroplast.
Yeah.
But like if they get one white man, it's easier to remove. Mm-hmm. Because like...
They have the swords.
They have the swords. They have the
potential leyline binding if they have enough mana. Because one of the problems is, and I actually encountered this, because last week I played a leyline binding deck against Painter.
Yeah.
And... Oh, it was not actually Painter, it was Food Chain. But yeah. they played Magus of the Moon in the sideboard and they jammed it against my it was basically only duels. And I was thinking, I should be fine, right? Because I have a leyline binding. I can just float the mana and then sit. And then I realized, oh, if I float the mana and then all my lands are actually mountains, my fucking leyline binding costs 5 mana. I cannot play it. So you would have to have a lot of
remaining. That's true.
It's possible, of course.
Yeah.
And you also have swords as another removal spell, but it is
not so easy. So it's still okay. I was riding the devil a little bit down to the wall, but should be still okay. But like Magus of the Moon should be like one of the number one priorities now.
I have to say, I played Painter myself, I think it was 3 weeks ago, and I also talked to Tobias, who is one of our better players, I would say, and at the Linz community. He also played Painter quite a bit in the meantime, and we talked about, because we have very, very a huge amount of 4-color and 5-color control decks at our local game store, and... The question is, I felt completely miserable with Painter playing the against the control deck. I was playing Fabian, one of our control players, and I couldn't do anything basically. I had Bowmasters. I didn't have the white splash, but I thought, okay, I have Bowmasters. I have a lot of blasts. I should be fine, right? But to be honest, Bowmasters, they don't care. They just keep on drawing, finding their terminus, and then playing Uro, and then everything is fine. They don't care about Bowmasters at all. And the second thing is Blast. How good is Blast against control nowadays? They have Leyland Binding, they have Up the Beanstalk, they have Source of Plowshares, they have Terminus. Yeah, okay, you can get a Brainstorm, you can get a Bondo, you can get a Force, okay, that's nice, but maybe an Uro, okay, but blasting an Uru is also not the best thing. So what is Blast actually doing at the point? I don't think Blast is so strong against control, to be honest.
The problem with Blast is Blast plays nowadays versus control pretty much the same versus combo.
Mm-hmm. Blast, just countering the cantrips.
It basically does that. And it was a huge problem versus, for example, Delver in the blue-red Delver era.
Yeah.
With Dragon Rage Channel and Ragavan.
Yeah.
Because the only threat you could have pyroblasted in the early game, or basically in the whole game, was the Murktide Regent. So even though you bought it in Pyroblast, which was previously pretty strong against Delver, if you're talking like 2019 or something like that, where they played like the Delver, maybe an off-color 2-drop, or something like the, how is it called? The 1-3 flyer that can loot when you cast the second
spell. Ledger Shredder,
for example. And the Murktide Regent. So all the threats are blue, so you have additional removal versus the threats, but it isn't really that.
True.
So the key spells from control are nowadays all...
Non-blue.
Yeah. Non-blue, because it's a huge thing if they are non-blue.
True. And to be honest, given, as you mentioned, Magus a couple of times, I mean, they don't have much basics, that's for sure, but... A lot of it increases their consistency in mana development is also Lorien Revealed. It is just a nice way of rounding out all the basics, all the duels they need for any given deck. And this is just, it's just very hard to deal with this deck.
And one key thing is with Lauren Revealed is, previously they had to kind of hope that they draw the one of Island or something like that to get to cast the Hydro Blast to remove the Magus.
For example, yeah.
Nowadays, as you said, Lauren Revealed for the basic, everything is Gucci and let's go.
Yeah. And what we have open here, for example, is one of the more popular Italian control players. It's from Angelo Cadei. He's playing actually a version without Beanstalk, but instead opting for the One Ring. Also a possibility in control, serving basically the same slot, more expensive, but it's just a powerhouse on its own and can win games on its own.
Yeah, it's like really, really strong. They're both the most potent card advantage engine currently. The One Ring basically with the downside that it costs you a life or more each turn and can be discontinued with like a Piffing Needle or something like that. But on the other hand, like a pretty, pretty strong thing.
And given that there's a lot of control decks at the moment, and I think control is definitely something you should expect going into this Eternal Weekend event. Especially because control is very popular in paper also. It's also one big factor for that. The question is how, if you're not playing control yourself, how you would beat this deck. I think this is something that you need to address when you go into this event. I think there are basically two options at the moment. Either you go under them. This would mean, you would have to go for combo decks, for example. They have a lot of interaction that is not so good against combo decks. At least game one, let's say. For example, Storm could be something because they don't care about Leland Binding, they don't care about Dress Down, they don't care about the forces they do care about, but usually you can fight those. And besides that, those don't care about Swords and Terminus, of course. So I think in that sense, Control Bears could be a little bit weak to that. But of course, a deck like Storm is not so heavily played in the overall meta game, which favors control again, because if they don't have to fight combo or something like reanimate or something, it is far more easier for them. And
the thing is, like, the current meta is like a lot dominated by the tempo strategies, as we have like with blue black scam, blue black shadow, then Grixis and Team Delver. So it's like
a lot of different variants actually.
Which is, we really, really have.
Yeah, but if you put them together, there's a lot of tempo decks also.
Yeah.
And these kind of keep combo still in check, I would say.
Yeah, for sure, for sure.
And in the end then, because tempo decks are still very, very kind of strong, a tempo plan will always be, if they have the certain kind of draws, winning over any deck.
Yeah,
and I think for that reason, they have a fair and very good chance against control.
True.
And the question is now, we have basically control, we have combo, tempo.
Yeah.
In combo, kind of, I think it is a little bit difficult.
I personally would say that the third pillar currently is the mid-range.
Mid-range.
Something on the side, Selesnya Dapps. It's like mid-range with a combo finish, like Painter, mid-range with a combo finish. Maybe we can even put in something like Cephalid Breakfast, if we want to put it. Mostly a dedicated combo deck.
Yes. I think right at this time, Cephalid Breakfast, but it has seen results. That's very interesting. Mostly online. And I was very surprised. Not a single card was changed back before the artifact was called Staff of the Storyteller came out. Before that, it's just normal Stoneforge Mystic version again, because it plays around Bowmaster. It's doing well, actually. I don't understand why, to be honest. I'm not too sure if you have a good control matchup, for example, with Breakfast. You are fast, of course. You have your Teferis, you have your Orym's Chant, but control still has Dress Down. Still has a lot of removal. Lean and binding swords, extra forces. I'm not too sure. I don't feel comfortable, to be honest.
Yeah, and I think like temper was also hard to deal with breakfast.
Yes.
Yeah. So it's like pretty hard.
Yeah.
And I still think that one of the key decks besides control that you have to look at is a good scam matchup. Scam is like
you have to do
a really, really potent deck. It will be a well represented deck because like a lot of decisions come down on turn one and two.
Yeah.
Even though the really good pilots have to play up on turn three, turn four, turn five really well to gain in the last percentage points.
Mm-hmm.
But for like, I want to play Legacy because it's Eternal Weekend. Yep. I want to play it. What's the best deck?
Yep.
Most of them will hand them, I think, Scam because it's like, it's just a really good thing and can get wins off of the turn one with the Scam thingy. So like having a good Scam matchup is really important. Mm. And one thing I was looking out for four-color control as an out because like, it's only one island. Something like Ruination is really big. But then I looked at the sideboard and there are three blue blasts.
Yeah, yeah.
Because Ruination is like the one thing that they have to deal with.
Yeah, I think they also really want to be dealing with some Blood Moon effects, which is one of the weakest point of these control decks.
Yeah.
Because outgrinding is not possible. You don't need grindy elements. So all of the sideboard is just helping against the tempo matchups. They usually have the three or four carpets. Then extra blast, mostly blue blast, which is also good against Grixis Delver, for example, of course. And then extra combo hate, surgicals, meltdowns, pyroblast, of course. Veil of Summer, Veil of Summer is also a very problematic card. It is good against Scam, naturally, and it's also naturally good against a lot of combo decks. So this is another thing that just seems very difficult for combo to deal with this kind of deck. And I personally, if you're not really an expert, and if you're not really Tony Scaboni, for example, combo could be hard, I think, at Eternal Weekends.
Yeah.
But Tony Scaboni, he just yesterday won a challenge, a Legacy challenge.
You mean a Vintage challenge, because he was playing POM, right?
Yes, it looked so in the beginning. But I think it was coming from, I think the root of the deck is, of course, Vintage.
It's for sure Vintage.
Because I think it was it originally built by Justin Gennari?
I think so.
He ported, I think, the version into Legacy. Tony picked it up and then I think he changed it a little bit and played it a lot. And it looks very nice, to be honest. I like it very much. PO is such a great card.
It's really awesome because I basically played one Vintage event up to now, which was in Bologna last year.
Yep.
And there I got linked the mono blue PO list from Tom Decker.
Mm-hmm.
And PO is amazing.
Yep.
It's such a cool card. Yep. But in Vintage you basically have like, I'm bouncing in Memoxen and stuff like that. I replay Memoxen, play another PO, make a shit ton of mana. I play a Soul Ring and stuff like that. You have to do it the hard way in Legacy.
Yep.
Which means bouncing up a single 2 mana, make 3 mana and stuff like that.
Yeah, Grim Monolith,
Mox Opals, the bad Moxen. But just it's amazing.
It's very good. And I think this deck can play a little bit around interaction into hate because it's more reliant not on individual artifacts, of course, besides the win cons.
Yeah.
But I think PO is instant, right?
So PO is an instant.
This is very important. If you just can melt down, you can just PO, for example.
Melt on you for 2. I PO back my 5 artifacts.
Draw 5 cards.
Please.
Yeah. So this is a lot of things that are going for. Also, it's very new and not really established deck, so a lot of people don't expect it. I think this is a big factor. And it has a very nice engine. It plays forces itself. And I think you can catch a lot of people off guard if you're really into this kind of strategy. It is almost like a hybrid of, it's kind of like Storm, actually. But still, this artifact theme, that could be also seen in 8 cards, but yeah, it is of course a very different deck. And come on, it's really nice when you get to win with, I don't know, Paradox Engine or Aetherflux Reservoir at some point. Yeah. This is a really nice win card.
Yeah, it's really, really strong. And one thing that we also have to mention is, like, I think it played to us at Sargamer, right? Should be.
Yeah.
Because Urza Saga is like single-handedly one of the most played cards for any artifact combo decks,
yeah,
because it gives, yeah, them such a strong game plan as an additional source of win percentage. And it's
also a construct or two can just win the game on its own with this heavy amount, yeah, of artifacts, that's, yeah, for sure.
I mean, in Vettage, you basically most of the time win with Vault Key and beat your opponent with the artifacts. But yeah, it's just strong.
And it has Manifold Key on its own, which is also a very nice combo with Grim Monolith.
Yeah.
Just untap it, ramp it. This is you just swift your rituals to artifacts.
Yeah.
And then you have your a card advantage engine in PO, which a normal Storm, for example, doesn't have access to. So... And Storm is dipping anyways a lot into Artifact at the moment because of Besiege the Mirror,
yeah,
which is a great card. But so Artifact Hate is already good against normal Storm, and as it is also good against this kind of PO Storm. But you have a lot more grindy elements. You have the PO, you have Emry.
Yeah.
Emry to recur and to get your pieces that you need. And it is a nice element of grinding. Which I think is overall a nice mix of cards. And you have also Thoughtcast and Thought Monitor to a certain extent. So you have a lot of draw engines also.
And do you know how sick it is to cast a Thought Monitor for 1 mana, draw 2, and then bounce it,
yeah,
with a PO,
yeah,
and replay it?
It's really nice. To be honest, I really like the deck. It has some weird sideboard options, I would say, sometimes.
Okay, tell me more.
One is a singleton repeal, which,
yeah,
is, I guess, one of, yeah, the ways to just bounce any permanent that you might want to bounce.
It's kind of okay to bounce a key because you switch, yeah, 2 mana for 2 mana.
Also, you're bouncing your own things is worthwhile also because it also draws you a card.
One thing with Vintage is like you pay the blue with the Mox Sapphire, you bounce the Mox Sapphire.
Yeah, yeah.
It's mana neutral and gets your card, which you, yeah, can do with a Mox Opal in Legacy.
Yeah.
And yeah, can remove some problematic stuff from your opponent, like an Alrod, or
for example, yeah,
bounce something as a protection on your side. So
that's,
it's
true,
really, really versatile. It's a Vintage deck, and I like it.
Yeah. The another one is Ravenform. Never really heard of this card beforehand. It is a sorcery.
I know it.
For two in the blue.
Yeah.
And it says Exile target artifact or creature. Its controller creates a 1 more blue bird creature token with flying. And it has 4 tell, 1 blue.
So you can exile it for 2 and then recast it for 1.
At a later turn, yeah.
Yeah.
So it is just in blue colors a really permanent removal for...
A beast with him, basically.
Yeah. Something but like it, a beast it's for him. Artifacts and creatures.
Yeah.
So it doesn't get rid of enchantments, but it is...
But it clears Collector Oof and Nalrod again.
Yeah, for
which
example.
Which are the huge... things you want to deal.
This is or do you care about Leland? No, I don't think you can. Do you really care about,
I mean, Leland? The Vincon is Aetherflux Reservoir.
Yeah, but you don't care about the black Leland. I don't think so.
Not really.
Yeah. Very nice deck.
Yeah.
I think this is something that I'm really interested if something like this fares very well, kind of sneaking through all the other meta game. But what else would you think would be... What about regular 8-cast? Do you think it is popular or strong at the moment?
I mean, basically we had a shift in 8-cast to differentiate between like the patchwork automaton version, which one just beats head.
Yeah.
And then the a little bit grindier version,
yep,
which is still called 8-cast.
Mm-hmm.
We
the sometimes, actually, at this point... The difference is actually not that big, or there's sometimes not even a difference at all. And honestly, we have to... maybe we have to discuss this point. I think Goldfish at the moment is just so messed up with the decks at the moment. It really is the case. I don't know if you have also listened to the last Every Territorial podcast.
No.
They also talked about this issue. For example, Boros initiative was not even present.
Yeah, because it was like Ada or something like that.
It was completely not present and it's the second most played deck in Goldfish. It's now added. They fixed it. But come on. Why cannot they just...
Do you see Scam here?
You don't see Scam. There is 4-color control. I mean, there's a lot of decks who... Come on, you have to add a lot more deck names and make them more uniform.
Basically, Entity Tapete, ugly interface, but it's still the thing to go.
It works, and at this time and point, we have to give the nod to Entity Tapete, to be honest. Yeah. Even though Goldfish is the most popular side, but yeah, it's confusing. And then here you can say 8-cast, and because 8-cast is still kind of non-existent. It is 6-cast with patchwork automaton. This is kind of the version.
Yeah, it's really insane, because on MTG Goldfish, you don't have Scam. Dimi Agro, it's called an MTG top 8.
Yeah, it's fine. It's
7%. Fine. Absolutely top 1 deck, most played deck in the Agro and Tempo archetype.
Yeah.
Then we have in Control, 4-color Control, 7% of the whole meta game.
Yeah.
Not present on MTG top 8.
Yeah.
The one thing is like, we don't really have... okay? We don't really have initiative here.
It is under Agro, I think.
Is it under Agro? Yeah. Initiative something 4%, yeah.
It is very strong deck, I think. Something like this Stompy deck, I think, has a good a nice matchup against Control. It could be, in my opinion.
So hard because they basically need to force twice or even thrice.
Yeah.
And one of the best things you can do versus this kind of Control deck is play an Archon of Emiria because it basically limits the spell power.
Yeah.
It makes most of their lands enter the battlefield tapped twice because fetch land and then dual land. So it's like incredibly strong against those kind of decks. And
also they have 4-3 lingers.
It's just only hits. Yeah. They play Fable. Fable is really, really strong. 4-3 lingers. Really, really strong. Jealous.
Yeah.
Strong versus Control.
Yep.
I mean, now it is not that potent, but still a strong card versus them. Then they have the Archon. And then they have basically...
Dungeoneer and
Yeah, then they have the 8 initiative creatures.
Yep.
And that's the thing that they drop.
I think this is also pretty good deck at Eternal Weekend. And you certainly should expect that. Because it beats Control, specifically. Yep. I'm not sure how it is against... Tempo decks, like I don't know, Scam. I think it could be hard because it has caverns and it can ramp up pretty safely. But if you discard one or two important cards, I guess you can get tempoed out.
Yeah, but it's still a really, really strong deck, and I wouldn't be wondering if like the deck wins Eternal Weekend, for example.
Could also be
I do not know who the guy is that won the super qualifier with in Legacy with Initiative.
Yeah.
But he has played it in 4 events.
Mm-hmm.
And in these 4 events he went winning the super qualifier, top 16 challenge, and 2 times top 4 challenge with Initiative. And it's just really strong.
Yeah.
It's incredibly strong and not that oppressive as the mono white initiative decks, but still incredibly potent. And 4-3 lingers is one hell of a card.
Yep. One other deck that falls into the category of BD Control, that recently is slowly kind of picking up steam, I think, is something like Cloud Post. It is a deck that really just runs over Control. They don't have anything, basically, and anything relevant. They just ramp up to Emrakul and then what you're going to do. But one of the issues of Cloud Posts, I guess this is more so the case than, for example, for Initiative, is tempo decks. That's for sure. So one of the worst matchups, maybe besides Doomsday or something like this, if you want to bring that up, is also Scam. It's not so good matchup. And therefore, I think this deck is, it has a lot of potential because it can beat control, but you gotta have a really solid plan against Scam and this tempo decks. And the question is, how can you achieve that?
Yeah, I think, I'm not sure, but I think I've even seen some Cloud Post players with Boreal Grazer. I'm not 100% certain.
Yes, there has been one, yeah. But usually they play more ramp in Elvish Spirit Guide, which is the slot that you gave up for this.
By the way, I've bought myself some Elvish Spirit Guides.
Yeah.
Alliances, excellent German Spirit Guides.
Oh, German. You lost me at German. No, but, but this is a nice card,
With Cloud Post, you still have a lot of decks that you are really strong again.
You have four rings right now.
You have the rings. Yeah. But one thing with the deck is like, if your opponent dirtles just a little bit, you just go over them.
Yeah.
Because the top end of the deck is so, so strong.
True. I mean, one of the best things they have in the sideboard, whenever they have four of course, is Carpet of Flowers, which is very important. It ramps up very, very strong or very big against tempo decks. It's very much needed.
Yeah, it basically allows to ignore Daze for the whole game.
Or sometimes Wasteland, because Wasteland is a big problem, of course, and therefore they also have the Pithing Needles in the main deck. It is important. But besides that, it has a little bit of issue. And also against, like Doomsday. They cannot do anything against Doomsday.
Yeah.
Against Storm, honestly, also, they don't have much. The one ring is something they can buy a couple of turns. If you just chain rings, then the Storm player cannot win. You have a couple of Veil of Summers in the sideboard as well. But that's about it, I would say. And a lot of things are not... You're kind of slow and not really interactive. And... it is a nice niche kind of deck, and if you're, it's also actually a really difficult deck to play properly, because it kind of operates on the lands axis.
Yeah.
You have a lot of different toolbox lands that you need to use in different situations, and it's very, very strong if you are knowing what you're doing, which is not always the case. So it's definitely not a Tron deck. If you want to compare, because a lot of people are saying, oh, this is just drawn, you just jam Emrakul and that's it.
No,
yeah,
it's crop rotation is a strong card,
and you need to know what you're doing with it,
because like getting your crop rotation counted is a real downside or a real drawback to the card. And there are some small details that you have to know about. You need to know your timings, you need to know your windows.
Yeah.
Because it's still a deck that plays a huge beater, something like a Primeval Titan and stuff like that. But if you tap out yourself on turn 4, it doesn't mean you make it till turn 6 or turn 5.
That's true.
So, pick your windows wisely. But
one of the main actually control players, which is Mark Erik Vogt, he recently kind of... picked up the deck, and I've also recently seen a statement kind of that this is might be, according to his opinion, one of the best things we can do in Legacy right now. So I'm very curious. I don't know how you would handle this random combo decks. If you just say, I have to ignore them. Maybe it's also down to getting to know the deck and know what you're doing and know your strategy against it.
Yeah, one thing is like, and... it was told at the Eternal Glory podcast, and I think I stand by it, that combo is usually underrepresented in paper tournaments.
Yeah.
And therefore, I can see the argument of Mark saying, I will lose one time to combo. Fuck it.
Doesn't care.
I will screw over all the other fair players.
Decks, all the fair decks. And you just crush. Crush, crush.
But I really want to see Mark without any blue cantrip.
Yes, this would be very interesting to see if this would be the case.
Do you know if he attends Eternal Weekend?
I think so. I don't know.
Okay.
But I think so.
Yeah. Do we have any other big things of the metagame currently besides two new printings?
We can talk about the printing shortly. I just want to mention two kind of versions. One of them is that I played last week's FNM.
Yeah.
Something like, well, maybe let's just go over my shitty pile because I think it's the wrong one. I wanted to see two different kind of mid-range bean piles.
Yeah.
And I had the option of two different ones. One you may know and one you might not know. The one is the better one. That is the one from Matthew Ozymandias, who split the challenge also recently.
Which deck was it?
It was a dark bent version with beans. It had Bowmasters, it had Leyland Binding up the beanstalk, and then general blue cantrip swords and two prismatic ending. And the threats were four Bowmasters, three Uro, and two Murktide.
Okay.
So, and the rest is just the mana base. So it's pretty mid-rangey, not full-blown control, but, you know, it is probably not so favored against control, like full-blown, because it has higher,
just
stronger.
Just in between.
Yeah, and if you're more focused on creatures, the terminus of your opponent is just better. You don't have four fear lingers yourself, so I would say you're not favored against control.
Yeah.
But you should be able to just crush tempo decks.
Yeah.
And you also I think because of the Merc test, for example, a pretty good shot also at dealing with combo decks. And this is something that looks appealing also to myself, because and you can relate to that as well, I think. Control is something that you need to be fast at.
I'm so bad at turning the tide.
Me also, yeah. Or you add more creatures and automatically more mid-range. And I thought this to myself also, and then there was the second deck that I saw. I also think I saw it in one German tournament result. It is actually just a straight-up banned version.
Okay.
But it looked really nice because it had four Wasteland, four Daze, four Murktide, four Catherine.
I know this.
Yeah. And four Beans and four Leylands. So you're kind of a tempo-ish kind of deck that just stomps the opponent with heavy hitters all the time. And you can also just randomly grind with up the beanstalk.
You have four swords, four.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, four swords, four beanstalk, and four Leyland Binding.
Such a deck is really, really strong.
Yeah.
Because Tray of St. Camphrine is like such a pillar of the deck. It's so incredibly strong.
Yeah.
And it's so unfortunate that it's not on MTGO.
True. The only thing that I mentioned, and this now segues kind of into the cards that we can talk about, I think this deck has a little bit of a problem because it's not full tempo and it's not full control. Actually, I found the Cathys to be awkward at some point, because when you naturally draw them, because they are four off, sometimes you just don't, you cannot cast them or you just don't want to cast it. And then it's just kind of a bad card that gets stuck into your hand. And I found myself that against combo decks or fast tempo decks sometimes, where you think, okay, this must be a good card, I actually don't want this.
Do you know what I think could help with it? Something like Ledger Shredder. I'm always thinking of, like, if I have a really potent card that I want to place a 4-off, but it's really awkward in my hand. It's like, sometimes you just want to loot it away.
Sometimes, yes.
Because like some Ledger Shredder, for example, would give you the option, if you double spell at the later turn, to just discard X's, because you only have four Brainstem in your deck. Mm. There isn't another cantrip that will allow you to put a card from your hand into your deck again. So it's like, better remove it from hand, get a potent card now, because you still have like two or three Cuffers left.
True. Could be one option. Well, Ledger Shredder has kind of proven itself to be not very strong in Legacy.
Do you know what's really strong with Ledger Shredder? If your opponent connives you, you get to cast your Catherine on your opponent's turn for its miracle cost.
Ah, you mean like if he triggers?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, of course. It's the same if you have set it up with Brainstorm or something.
Exactly. So I think a good pairing for this card would be like a two of Ledger Shredder. It's mostly theoretically fun because I'm not playing the deck, but it seems like a good fit because it's almost like two problems. Yeah. It enables more of your triggering with the miracle cost, and it helps you with discarding excess.
I found that the deck still it struggles kind of bit against fast decks, kind of there where you really need to get resources. And I played last week against Infect with Legolas as the new card. And boy, this was just... it was a nightmare.
You now have to be really, really cautious. Because nowadays with Legolas, for anybody that doesn't know the card, there is two important facts. Protection and Split Second.
Yeah.
And it's incredible. And one thing with protection is... until the next end of turn, which means most likely your opponent will end of your turn cast Legolas on his creature because it frees up a single mana for the next turn. It still has protection from everything. And then you basically pump your creature up until it's lethal enough. It attacks, it shoots your own blocker if it isn't something that flies. Yeah. And then they win the game. So nowadays, if you have a removal spell, second main phase, cast it.
Yeah.
You on your turn. On your turn. You can't allow your opponent to get up to their turn. If you want to remove a creature from your opponent, second main phase.
Yeah.
Because then you spend your Swords of Plowshares. They have to spend the Legolas. Then on your turn, you can once again, if you have another removal spell, Prismatic Ending or Swords of Plowshares, the creature, they have to spend another one and still don't have protection on your next turn.
Yeah.
So second main phase is once again a really, really important step.
Yeah, this is, and you really, I really felt the pressure that if any threat was sticking on the battlefield, you have to kind of respect the card and you have to calculate, okay, I could be dead.
Yeah.
If I pass, I'm dead. And there's so much pressure on the deck to find removal spells to kill threats. It is I think such a big a booster for Infect as a deck. It is even with Ink Moth, you can even activate Ink Moth itself and then play Legolas on it. It untaps. Yeah. It also added effect. It untaps. It clears a blocker. If you pump it enough and your opponent has a Murktide, we just shoot it. Don't care.
It
does everything kind of.
Yeah, the big thing with the card is like it's a split second Mother of Runes, basically.
Yeah.
That comes from your hand, so you don't know the timings and stuff like that. But it's similar to the Mother of Runes burning. It just gives protection from everything. But split second is like such a stupid effect for it. It's basically as we had like Fenris Cloud, Sam Nams said it's the best thing that happened to Infect since Infect.
I agree.
And yeah, it seems like it is.
Mm-hmm.
I was skeptical at first because it was like, it doesn't pump the creature. Yeah.
And I think this is the biggest critique about the card, of course. It doesn't pump.
It should have given it +2/+2 MRI.
Yeah, this would be at least playable. Come on.
I mean, but one thing that we have to, I want to see here like a similar pairing is like when we all started playing Pokemon. For example, we had like to choose the four moves that our Pokemon can learn. And do you know what the moves were that we didn't learn our Pokemon? Non-damaging moves. It's non-damaging moves.
That is true, yeah.
And the thing that is like leveling up with your knowledge about the game is like non-damaging moves. It's like when you play the cantrip instead of like an excess creature that is worse, for example.
Yeah.
And this is something with Legolas. It's the best thing that you can do, and there really can't be anything better at protecting a single creature be printed in the future of Magic, because it just can't. It's a split sec protection spell. The one thing it can say is like, if there is a board wipe or a terminus effect, it will still stay on the battlefield, but that's the only line.
Well, it doesn't, of course.
It doesn't, but it's the one thing that could make the card better.
Or pump spell, right?
Or it gives it plus nine.
And make it for mana just because.
And attacking an infect triggers at attack. Yeah. But but yeah, there is not really anything that...
Terminus is one of the better cards that is good against infect, of course, because it can play around the Legolas. But other than that, spot-based removal, there's a lot of swords and Leyline Binding still flowing around. So yeah. Infect is, I think, really a deck to watch in the coming year. And also at Eternal Weekend, for sure.
Yeah, but I would rate this deck still a specialist deck. I think there could be somewhere around like 3 to 4 pilots out there in whole Europe that can play the deck. Yeah. Good. I personally would say, like, we have one in Austria too, but he won't play Infect.
Okay.
So, yeah, will be interesting how it fares.
And also maybe in other decks, because I've seen versions, or it could be a nice addition to some kind of Dark Depths strategies. Oftentimes you have something like Not From This World or... Sylvan Safekeeper.
Yeah,
these are like the protection effects that you would also have, or that Sigiri step. It fits also in this kind of deck. Green, if it's white, or black, if it's more turbo depths, or white mid range depths, could be a nice card for this deck also.
Yeah, one thing is like when you attack with Maud Large, then you basically shoot the Fopter that's in front of it or something like that.
For example. But it's still a pretty common legacy creature you have to face.
I mean, for example, in Painter, you have Brace Apprentice that makes a 1/1 Fopter, or with 8 cast, you make a 1/1 Fopter and stuff like that. Mm. It's still a random fly that
unfortunately runs around. Sai would be the one, right, that makes the Fopters.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not really played at the moment because
I've seen it as a 1/1 in the list.
Sometimes, yes. But it's really just bad. So bad against the Bowmasters, yeah.
But it lines up so perfectly. It's a 1/4.
It's a 1/4, yeah. That's for sure.
And draw your cards.
Yeah.
But yeah, I would say Legolas is a potent card, but we will see how it fares at Eternal Weekend. I will be for sure playing Painter in Legacy. Yeah. I will also play a second format at Eternal Weekend.
Okay. Which is, I guess, pre-modern.
It's pre-modern.
Yeah. Also pretty nice.
Do you know which deck I will play?
Blue, either Stifle Knot or this kind of... it's Stifle Knot, right?
Yeah.
Or... was it blue-black control? Blue-white control?
No.
Okay.
Mark advertised blue-white control to me, but I said I'm too bad for it. No, the deck is most likely Stasis.
Stasis. Yeah.
The thing with I've talked to a guy Ibichu on Twitter about Dreadnought, and I really should play the blue white version. The blue white version looks infinitely better than the mono blue version, because like I played the mono blue version like a little bit, but the thing is like if you don't draw your Dreadnoughts, you're basically fucked.
Yeah.
And with the blue white version, you gain 4 other attacking creatures in the form of Meddling Mage. You get Swords of Plowshares, which is really really potent. So it's like really strong, and the mana base doesn't get that much worse. Mm. Seems just the better choice, but I think you wanna play Stasis in there.
Okay. Is Stasis also? Is it blue?
Green.
Blue green, okay.
I mean, the 4 green cards in the deck are 4 Metamorphos, I think.
Mm-hmm.
It's the 1 green enchantment where Avalanche enters the battlefield tapped, and 2 spirit guides.
Ah, okay.
That's the reason about spirit guides for the deck.
Seems like a nice deck to play it. When is pre-modern? Is it on
Sunday?
On Sunday, okay. So on Saturday, I think, is the main event, right? Of Legacy. And because it's 3 days, right? Is there something planned on Friday?
There are something like trials, where you can play also Command and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But I will arrive in Prague at 8 in the evening.
Yeah.
Then we will just go to the apartment.
Yeah.
go get to the something main event. To drink and eat, and yeah. then on the next day to the main event.
Sounds also like a nice plan, that's for sure. Yeah. Yeah. I think we have talked a lot about what different decks you can expect and face. So, what will you play in Legacy?
I will play Mississippi River.
the hidden gem that we didn't talk about.
The ye olde switcheroo. Yeah. No, it will be like 99.5% on Painter.
Yeah.
It's just which slots I have to take and... If I get my hands on Mississippi River Plate. No, it's... Yeah, I think Painted is... I think the meta looks definitely worse than it was in Bologna.
Yeah.
In Bologna, the deck was really, really well prepared.
With this white splash that is added there, yeah. It was really good choice, yeah.
Yeah, the white splash is still really potent because it's such a strong thing also that you can do against Timur Delver. With the uptick in depths and lands, it's also really strong. The one thing is like bean piles are really, really hard to get through. And the thing is like Timur bean piles are still good to grind through, but four color control seems much, much higher as a metagame percentage and much, much worse to play against.
Mm-hmm.
So if I hit like a few control players, can seem dicey, but all in all, it's still okay, but it isn't like the tier 1.5 deck that it was.
Yeah. So you're not trying to shifting for a more combo oriented plan or something like this to beat control, for example?
Even if you switch to a more combo oriented plan, doesn't really mean which slots you kind of want to change. Because like having more than two grindstones seems like bad, maybe a third, but I don't really want to look into current versions because I'm so unfamiliar in the latter year because I haven't played it. So I really want to switch off Karn, even though Karn would be really strong because like we still have 8 cast.
Yeah.
We still have the Patchwork Automaton aggro deck.
Or
we
PO
have
Storm, 8 key. For example.
Or PO Storm. So Karn would be a strong player, or as we saw like with Angelo Kadai's control deck where he plays the Wandering, where Karn would also be strong, but I really have to put in my favor on my soul lying around Piffing Neil to stay on the field because like but one thing that we can ask now, and maybe our listeners still hear us, is how is the timing window of Leyland Binding in regards to Goblin Welder?
The timing?
Yeah.
In which situation?
Do they announce the target when the ability goes on the stack? Or do they announce the target when the ability goes off the stack? Can you Welder away the creature that gets Leyland Binding'd?
If I remember correctly, Leyland Binding says when it enters the battlefield, you exile a non-land permanent until Leyland Binding leaves the battlefield.
Yeah. A or target?
I think it's target. Because
I think it's A.
I think it's target.
I hope so too, because...
It must be target. It would be insane. Then you could also play get a creature that is Legolas'd with Leyland Binding. It must be target.
Excel target. Okay.
So you can.
So you can weld it.
Yeah, yeah.
So my welder will get Leyland Binding most likely.
Perfect.
Not perfect, but perfect 20 episodes.
Yes, this is what I wanted to say. Peter, I think we can only wish you all the best for the Eternal Weekends. Let's hope that you have another great showing as you had in Bologna with Painter.
I hope so too.
And for all the listeners, it is very important if you have liked the episode that you share it, of course. Maybe give feedback and of course follow us on our social media channels. It is @inresponse. Everywhere.
It's @ResponseLegacy.
Yeah, that's true. True.
Am I right?
Yeah, it's response underscore legacy. Yeah, true. I mistake that there. It's response underscore legacy in all platforms.
Ah, Phil is missing.
Yeah. And yeah, thanks again for the patrons. That's for sure. If you have not seen it, we also have a Patreon. Check it out.
We also have a merch shop.
We also have a merch shop that you can see in our link tree, where we have all the links available, and you can have a look at those as well. Get yourself a nice cap of In Response that we're also wearing at our nice events and in the public events, that's for sure. And Peter, where we can find you on social media, you personally?
You can find me on x.com, formerly known as Twitter. It's at UnicornLord, but the O in the Lord is a zero. And where can we find you, Daniel, your flying aberration?
Flying aberration. Could be my second alteration account.
You mean as I'm the second personality of Wince? But
most of the time, I'm still on my main account, which is @FlyingDelver, also on Twitter. So, yeah, I think this was a nice talk. And, yeah.
In response. The end.
Perfect.
This was In Response, a Legacy Podcast. If you enjoyed the ride, feel free to support the show by following, leaving a review, or subscribe on patreon.com/response_legacy.